welcome to Growing Up in America on KPFT Houston Pacifica Radio with our host from Children at Risk, noted child activist Dr. Bob Sanborn, and policy expert Mandy Kimball. What do we have on tap today, Bob and Mandy?
Mandy, how you doing?
Hello, hello. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you. You ready for a rocking and rolling show here?
You know it.
Talking about kids and such.
It's a great day to do it.
It is, right? We always love talking about this policy stuff. Hey, thanks, Don, for the great intro, man. And you ready to talk about what we're doing today?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Mandy, how's your summer going, by the way?
It's great.
The boys, they doing well?
Rapidly coming to an end. We only have two weeks. In 2 days.
Yeah, this is the last week for all the interns at Children at Risk, too, mm-hmm. right?
We have That's
how many
fun.
Interns do we have? 22, 23
Something
interns?
Something like that.
It's like buzzing. We love them, though, right?
We do.
So we're going to start off today's show with the director of the Center for Social Measurement and Evaluation, Andy Canales. The number today, Mandy?
Mm-hmm.
100.
100.
Yeah, 100.
What 100%? Could that
be? 100%.
I don't know.
Disgust in our government?
No. That's a little extreme.
That's too much.
That is
99%.
PMA, positive mental attitude. Mm-hmm. We can do it.
Very good.
After Data Head, we'll be talking with Brittany Joswiak from the Mayor's Office of Special Events, who will share information about the Mayor's Back to School Fest. Don't miss out on the fun. It's right around the corner.
Back to school. You ready for the kids to be back to school?
Yes.
Not
but
for you.
Fun.
It's because they need the learning, right? It's not
That's
about
right.
you getting the space. It's the
That's
learning
right.
that they get. Right?
Well, I mean, as a working mom, I get the same amount of space, right? But they've had fun. They've mm-hmm. had a great summer. But I think that they're missing their friends. And they're at the age where they still like school. So it'll mm-hmm. be okay.
Very good. Also coming up on the show, Dr. Palak Jalen and Senior Program Manager at Access Health discussing the social detriments of health.
And determinants.
And detriments. What are the detriments and determinants of health? Wow. You, Mandy, did you see how we had a role switch right there, right?
Yeah.
Like, usually it's
Felt
me
good.
Like, it's me all over you. And very good.
Sorry
so the
that.
Social determinants of health. We're going to talk a little bit about that, which is not a new concept, right? But it's always good to remind ourselves mm-hmm. about the social determinants, the detriments to the health of our children.
Something that we always need to keep a close eye mm-hmm. on. Mm-hmm. And then today on our social conscience scale, we want you to call in and share your opinion, thumbs up or thumbs down. And today we'll be discussing online preschool.
Right. So can you do online preschool? So the idea is, right, you could just do it online.
That's
preschool
right.
online.
Virtual learning.
It doesn't really work for working parents, but the idea is if you're a parent at home, want a little help, online preschool.
Could be. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, I know we're going to talk about it. I know. We've had some opinions on this. Mandy has very strong feelings, right?
I do.
But I think your feelings are going to be probably where most people would fall, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what? Online preschool? Can't be done. Yeah,
but there's all kinds of apps out there that parents download for their kids. The
there's
ABCs,
a lot of bad ones too,
the
right?
math. So yeah, I'm just yeah. saying there's a lot out there,
there
good
are.
And bad.
Yeah, there are. There are. So that's interesting. There's some good. There's some bad. I think a lot of people are familiar with some of the bad ones. Our final guest today will be our good buddy, H.D. Chambers. He's the superintendent for the A-Leaf School District here in the Houston area. And we're going to talk to him about the status of education in the state of Texas.
There we go. He always has great things
yeah,
to
no,
say.
Yeah, no, he's like, he's
innovator,
an insider, right?
Great voice in Austin.
Insider, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so we love HD, and he'll be talking to us a little bit about what's going on in education. So, Mandy, I think it's going to be, you're here, it's going to be a good show.
That's right. It's going to be a fantastic show, great guests, and as always, you're so much fun to be with Dr. Bob.
Mm-hmm. This is Growing Up in America here on KPFT, Houston Pacifica Radio. This is a discussion on our children, public policy, politics, and our future. How do we as a nation do when it comes to taking care of all of our kids? Speaking, Mandy, of taking care of all of our kids. Down on the border, I wanted to mention this. A lot of those kids still have not been returned to their families. This whole family separation policy thing is like a deal, isn't it?
It is. I think people are over their heads.
Yeah.
I mean, it's complicated. It's dramatic. It's traumatic. Mm-hmm. And we need to get those kids.
We need to keep
with
up that
families.
Pressure. Hey, Shannon, do you know, are we going to have in some of the upcoming shows, do we have some people talking about some of the stuff from the border, family separation?
Yeah, yes, we do. She's giving us the nod.
Yeah, we're going to have that. So I think we need to keep the pressure up on this, right? This is the deal.
We do. We want to make sure, especially at such critical points when you have babies and infants and toddlers and even elementary school.
And then now we're here, you know, so I was talking to someone who's visiting the camps and talking about just the horrible conditions that a lot of these kids are in. And then now we have parents being deported and their kids aren't returned to them, right? Because we just don't know what's going on. It's just something else. So you ready for a little data head?
Let's do it.
So Mandy, poetry in motion. We must be talking about Andy Canales, right?
Mr. Canales.
Yes. Andy, how you doing, man?
Hey guys, I'm doing well.
Andy's
how
out.
Are you?
Good. Andy's out in the wind. You could hear the wind.
Yeah, he's walking. His cell phone. Getting his steps in.
He's just figuring, you know, I'm going to do this radio show like really smoothly. I'm just going to go out and take a little walk. Andy appreciates the afternoon heat.
So. He's a great advocate trying to get from one place to another and do a phone call.
Yeah.
Some people say
right.
Multitasking.
I'm inside the car.
Oh, you're inside the car
in
now?
In between meetings, but I just turned down the AC a little bit.
Oh, there you go. Yes, because it was all windy. Andy is the director of the Center for Social Measurement and Evaluation at Children at Risk. Andy, what is the number today?
The number is 100, and that is the average number of days that children across Harris County are out of school every summer.
Wow, 100 days. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, Andy, what does that mean for that child?
Yeah, so national research shows that low-income children who are out of school every summer lose about 2 months of learning every year. And so that loss of learning really holds students back. And if you think about the compounding effect that that has throughout their K-12 education, it is really alarming and so detrimental for our children who really need to have the most learning opportunity as possible.
And Andy, I know you and I have talked about this, right? But in Texas, kids get probably on average about 170, maybe even up to 180 days of school a year, depending upon professional development days taken by teachers. But when we look at other countries get 30 to 60 days more days in school. What does that mean for kids? If we have the 170 days or 180 day calendar with a full summer off and they get 2 months of learning loss, if you have more school days, what would that mean for our children?
Yeah, so I think just the ability to continue to retain the learning that a child or a student has had throughout the year would just be so much better. I remember when I was a teacher, even just after winter break, students would come back after just that two-week period, and they had forgotten a lot of the things that we had covered prior to that. And then definitely after every summer, kids just fell behind. And so if they had more time on task, I think they would just be better positioned to be successful in school.
It's a complicated conversation, right? Mm. Because we talk about school days, like how many, but it's
right.
But it's really also about quality time on task, right?
Right.
And
right.
So just adding more days consecutively, I don't know if that's the answer, because you can also talk to teachers and by like October, November, kids are cracking out, right? Like how much can I retain? I need a break. And so I'm an advocate for year-round school where you have some time, quality time on task. People are energized, a short little break, because that's important
little
too.
Little breaks are good.
Right?
Yeah, little breaks
you,
are
you
nice.
You want kids to be engaged and be able to explore and do things that you can't do in a classroom,
yeah.
Right? And so just looking at the model of what best meets the needs of children and families is really important.
You also hear the argument, right, that are they getting quality for 170 days? But that's beside the point. They should be getting quality for 170 days. They should be getting quality for 180 or 200, right? It should all be good. Good breaks are good.
And But they're not. That's the reality, right?
Brakes
they're
are not good?
Well, no, that the quality 170 or 80 days are not. Because I will tell you this, you're talking about how it's only about 180 days in Texas. My son, who took the STAR test in third grade, for 2.5 weeks after the STAR test,
burnt out.
They didn't do anything.
Oh, they
you could
didn't.
Bring electronics.
Oh, no.
I mean, there was no teaching going on in the last 2.5 weeks of school.
Yeah,
they were burnt out, I guess. And why?
Well, everyone.
I mean, yeah.
Teachers.
It's
included,
true.
Right?
So we need to figure out another system where parents and students are engaged and ready.
Yeah, and to bring this anecdotal evidence of your son is I think is important. I think when we look at research studies overall, that we do that academic time on task, as you mentioned, is really important. Andy, when we look at academic time on task, how likely is it that Texas sees the light around summer loss, around academic time on task? And when we're talking about children growing up in poverty or low-income households, we're talking about 60% of the public school student body in Texas. It seems like that 60% is the group most impacted by summer loss and not enough school days.
Right. Well, I can tell you that earlier this year, when I was testifying at the Senate Education Committee, there was a bill up about extending the school year. And I sat through hours of testimony, and some testimony that I witnessed was from the vacation industry, from the San Antonio area. And they made very compelling arguments about why it would be detrimental, not just to the local economy, but to the families and to the children, for school districts to extend their day, their school year, and cut the number of days that people are able to vacation in the San Antonio region. And so how likely is it that Texas sees the light? I think there would be a lot of obstacles, but one good news is that lots of districts are taking matters into their own hands and creating their own schedules through the district of innovation opportunity that they have.
Yeah.
That's right. I think that's where we're going to see it. So we know that through the districts of innovation, that's the second, first, third reason or way that school districts are waiving that we have to do a solid start date.
70% of all the Texas school districts have decided to do this district of innovation.
They want flexibility on their school calendar. And so maybe it's baby steps right now. Maybe they're just starting a couple of weeks early, but really, hopefully in the near future, we'll see real innovation.
So right now, Andy, to your point, the vacation industry has more power than children in our state.
Well, definitely seems to have a lot of sway. And I think it depends on who you ask, right? So if you're maybe a middle or upper class family, you probably really treasure and enjoy the opportunity for your children to have enriching summer learning and traveling experiences. Mm-hmm. But as you mentioned, you know, nearly 2/3 of the student population in Texas is low income. And I know from my own personal experience, every summer I wasn't traveling or having an enriching summer camp. Growing up myself as a low income kid, I was watching TV all day and babysitting my younger brother. And that's not helpful. That was not helpful for my learning. I'm sure that's the case for the majority of the student population here.
And when you think sometimes when you're just a card short, you think it's because you watch too much TV as a kid? Is that what happened, Andy?
That's what I blame it on. Oh, I'm sorry I mispronounced that word, or I forgot to do that deliverable, Dr. Bob.
It might have been better than the video games now they're playing or, you know, watching on their iPad.
Those are educational, Mandy.
Yeah, right.
They're educational. Yeah. Andy still plays those, too. So.
Right.
Oh, Andy. Andy, thank you so much for all the work, everything that you do. Andy Canales is the director of the Center for Social Measurement Evaluation. Andy, thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks. Alrighty, have a good one. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Growing Up in America on Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT here in Houston. And
you know, we should thank all of our listeners who pledged money last week, the last 2 weeks. Who
last
supported.
Couple of weeks,
yeah,
right? We've had some generous support, didn't we?
We did. Thank you.
Made some big goals that last week. We did very well, so we really want to thank all of you. You ready to talk about this back to school?
Yes.
Very good. All right. I'm ready as well. So,
are you ready for school to start?
Yeah, it really has an impact on my life, but it has an impact on all lives.
You're an empty nester.
So on the line with us is Debbie Griffith. Debbie is with the Mayor's Office of Special Events.
Back to school.
Hello, how are you guys?
Good. There's like a little theme song here, Debbie, that this is like what, Adam Sandler? No, let's take him off. Yeah, that's not good. So on the line with us is Debbie Griffith. You know, I know Shannon really worked hard to get that music, too. So it just didn't work. So, Debbie, tell us about this Mayor's Back to School Fest. What's going on with that?
Well, this is the 8th annual Mayor's Back to School Fest, and we're going to be holding it at the George R. Brown Convention Center. And Shell is our title sponsor, who's donated the funds so that we could provide 25,000 Greater Houston area students with a beautiful clear backpack, and we will have school supplies inside the backpacks, and then we'll have a wonderful medical area. So what sets us apart from the other Back to School Fest backpacks giveaways is that we do free immunizations, free dental screenings, free vision screenings. We'll get you some haircut vouchers. We have a plethora of nonprofits who have booths with additional backpacks, and Metro's even kicked in some free transportation. So it's a really great way to get all your bases covered at one location.
And how many kids? How many kids, Debbie?
We have 25,000 backpacks.
25,000.
Now, how many kids do you usually get, though?
At the event, we'll get about 18 to 20.
Oh, wow. Nice number.
That's
right?
Great.
That's really good.
And then anything left over, you know, can go to some of our council members hold their own backpack giveaways, and we try to dole them out as needed.
And what's the reason for the clear backpack?
Well, you know, back in the day, there was some worry about people bringing, you know, firearms or drugs or, you know, items that they shouldn't be bringing to school.
Yeah, there you go.
The clear backpacks just, again, covers the bases. You don't have to worry about picking a color. You know, a little girl may want a pink one. A little girl may want a black one. But we're going to give everybody the same thing, and you get what you get.
It sounds
You'll
wonderful.
Like what you like.
Yeah. Well, and what seems special about this are the vouchers for haircuts, really getting them ready, the immunizations,
yeah,
the screening, the dental.
Voucher.
Debbie, we were just talking about how many days kids miss or don't go to school, and so we need to make sure that they're ready to go so we're not having to pull them extra days because we didn't check the boxes to make sure that they were healthy to learn. We were talking about this earlier and how access to health and your health care plays an important factor in a child's education, because if you're not healthy, then you're not going to school and you're not able to learn to go. So
yes, and you know, you go to school, you can't see very well. You're not going to perform well.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
I think that's important. The free vision screenings by the University of Houston
are
done on site. And then if the child needs additional vision, you know, exams, they'll get a voucher to go on the campus of the University of Houston and possibly get a voucher for a free pair of glasses.
Yeah, they're really good about doing that. That van that comes out from U of H is fantastic. What are the key immunizations that are often given at this at the Mayor's Back to School Fest, Debbie?
All of the ones that you need to get into school. For instance, the age level is from kindergarten through fifth grade. So that elementary, you know, the very basics. You get a flu shot if you want it, but you definitely get all of the other ones that are needed to enter school. And then the dental screenings, it's amazing to see the number of chairs that are out there that have kids in them where they're getting sealants on their teeth. Mm. A lot of these kids have never even been to the dentist. And so that's not a requirement of school to go to the dentist, but we provide that on site. I would be remiss also if I did not mention undies for everyone.
Oh, of
also
course.
Also brings out three pair of underwear per student. So
this is something people don't talk about. And,
right.
And when you do, kind of makes you feel awkward, but it is so important.
Yeah, yeah. Rabbi Weiss is bringing out
That's
the underwears,
right?
Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely. She and her team do a great job and have thousands of underwear are given out each year. And, you know, if you're low income or underserved, you may not have the luxury of, you know.
Who doesn't like a new pair of underwear? Come on.
Right? Exactly. Right.
Yeah. Mandy was just telling me that. Actually, Mandy's never told me that. She's never told me that.
Don't go there.
So I'm wondering in regards to Mandy's just shaking her head, Debbie, and as well she should, right? As well she should. So I'm wondering if on this event, is it a quick get in and leave, or are there things, are there activities for the kids when they get there?
Well, with all of the booths that I was speaking of, and a lot of the sponsored booths also, they have games where the families can play, you know, the little Plinko or, you know, the Wheel of Fortune, as it were,
yep.
And then they win additional items, like maybe a toothbrush or maybe an extra pencil or pen or notebook or ruler or whatever. You know, we make sure that everybody who comes out and who wants to give something away, it's going to be useful for school.
Bunch of freebies.
We're not going to ask them to bring out koozies.
Who doesn't like to get a freebie? And will the mayor make a special appearance, sort of like Santa Claus coming?
He does. He comes out. He comes and gets his flu shot. He comes and he, you know, interacts with all the families. Last year he was there for half the time. So
wow.
Depending on his schedule, he definitely comes out. The value of this event is very, very high on his list.
What a nice thing for our kids, though, in our city, right? Mm-hmm. To be able to come, get your immunizations, you know, get a voucher for a haircut, and then a backpack plus other things that might be there. It's a great way to start the school year.
Get you in the mood, feel the spirit.
Yeah,
yep.
Exactly.
Now, the only thing that we ask is that people pre-register. This is to help with, you know, you could imagine 18 to 20,000 people arriving at one place at one time. So it helps to cut down on long lines. That's the other thing. You know, you were talking about getting people in,
yeah.
Getting people out.
Yeah.
We want to make sure that we assign people times. Now, you know, there does come a time where you might have a sick child, and so you can't come at your assigned time.
Yeah.
But if you show up, we'll take care of you. And if you don't get a chance to register, we'll register you there.
That's good. You know, when we used to do those big health fairs, right? And to have everyone come early in the morning is just not as efficient because there's longer lines. You come later in the day, you get in more quickly for your immunizations, and the places really don't run out of immunizations, right? So
that's exactly right. We never run out.
So there's plenty of ways to do that. But I love that idea of registering. Do it. But if you can't register, still head on down, right? You'll be taken care of. I think that's the important thing there. Some people in this day and age are sort of afraid of registering, so that's where it's good. Just if they want to come on down, they can do it.
That's right.
So.
And all we're using that information for is, you know, where do you go to school, you know, how many people are attending, you know, just facts. We don't delve any deeper than that.
Debbie Griffith is with the Mayor's Office of Special Events, the big 8th Annual Mayor's Back to School Fest, mm-hmm. August 11th, 8 in the morning to 2 o'clock. And it's George R. Brown, Debbie, is that right?
That is correct.
Free of charge.
Free of charge.
K through 5th grade. Hey, Debbie, thanks for doing this. Thanks for all you do. Thanks for being on Growing Up in America today.
And thank you for your time. We really appreciate it.
All right.
Have fun.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
You're listening to Growing Up in America, KPFT. Pacifica Radio 90.1. It's Dr. Bob and Mandy.
Yeah.
Mandy, how are you doing on your flu shot? It seems early to me to be thinking about it, but we can do it though, right?
You can.
Yeah.
And it's so important.
Yeah. Did you get a flu shot last year? I didn't get the flu at all last year. I got my flu shot, didn't get the flu.
That's what happens.
It's funny, whenever we talk about this, people always say, I got the flu right after it. Well,
no.
You were going to get the flu anyway.
Yep.
We're just using scientific proof here.
Science.
No anecdotes.
They say you cannot catch the flu from the flu
shot.
Very
good. You ready for ready for a doctor?
Doctor!
On the line with us is Dr. Palak Jalen, Senior Program Manager over at Access Health. Dr. Jalen, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Good, good. Is that how you pronounce it, by the way, Jalen?
It's Jalan.
Jalan. See? Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, Dr. Jalan. We've talked about the social determinants of health quite often on this radio show, but we can't really talk about it enough, right? So give us a little brief, you know, what is it that can truly impact the life of kids early on in terms of social determinants of health?
That's really interesting. I know you would have surely read that statistic, but it says your zip code that you're born in determines your trajectory of life the most. more than anything else or any other factor. So just it re-emphasizes the fact that where we are born and what happens after that determines how healthy we're going to live. So I think neighborhood, parks, fresh air to breathe, transportation, housing, all sound like basic social needs, but all of these have such a big impact on social on children growing up healthy and doing well later.
Dr. Jalan, now when people think of Fort Bend County, you think it's one of the fastest growing counties. There's quite a bit of affluence in Fort Bend. However,
most diverse county in the country.
Most diverse county. Proud of that one. However, there are pockets of poverty. There's food deserts. There's childcare deserts, a lack of health. Can you talk about what's going on in Fort Bend, and do you feel like the needs are being met, Fort Bend children?
So, like you both mentioned the statistics really well, it is the most diverse county. It's the fifth fastest growing county, and it's also the sixth healthiest county in Texas. But when we look at the population, it's about a 750,000 right now, which is going to reach a million in a couple of years. Beyond that, 70% of Fort Bend County is undeveloped. So you'll see like a lot of diversity, a lot of good things going on for Fort Bend County, but that's really localized in certain areas like that of Sugar Land and surrounding areas. Mm. When you look at the other part of Fort Bend County, it's rural, it's polarized, and 28% of Fort Bend County or the community qualifies for a sliding fee scale, which means they are 100 to 200% below the federal poverty line. So the poverty is really polarized. The diversity, as you mentioned, is also really polarized. So you'll see diversity exists in the population that's doing really well and is affluent in nature. Well, when you look at poverty, it's not as diverse as you would think it is.
Dr. Jalan, and I know that your work out in Fort Bend County, and Fort Bend County is an extraordinary place in many ways, right? It's being mm-hmm. so diverse. It doesn't have as many children in poverty as, it's not certainly reflective of the state of Texas. It's a bit more affluent, right, than mm-hmm. the rest of Texas. And when you talk about the zip code in which you're born being the biggest determinant of health, mm-hmm. and success in life, a lot of that has to do with affluence. What are mm-hmm. the mitigators, right? So let's say, you know, Mandy and I are born in a poor county. What are the mitigators? What are the things that can be done for us early on that are going to help us be successful?
I think first of all, and this I think is aligned with the mission of Children at Risk, it's education.
Mm.
When we look at the data and we talk about education, education changes the trajectory in a lot of ways. Getting education, getting access to food, getting access to healthy nutrition leads to better brain development. So when you have education in line with access to nutritious food and healthy life, that leads to proper growth and development of children. So I think those are the two big mitigators. They're more in number, but I think education
yeah.
is healthy nutrition would be the doctor.
Yeah.
You're talking about nutrition and education and health. Can you talk a little bit more about developing versus developed world perspectives on these issues? Because a lot of people think, oh, a developed world, it's all under control, when really that isn't the case.
That's true. And a lot of people also think that most solutions arise in the developed world. And it's interesting how a lot of interventions and like you mentioned, the intersection with nutrition, health, and education is being scaled better in the developing countries because there's a lack of resources. With very limited resources, they are supposed to make a huge impact in population. So when we talk about the use of community health workers, the way it's being done in some countries like India and some countries of Africa, they're really scaling the models up such that it's upstream, and the community health workers have direct touch with kids and their moms to talk about what healthy nutrition looks like for growing kids. Our WIC sites, our Women's Influence and Children sites, do the same, and the doctor's office would do the same, but this is really touching people where they mm-hmm. are. So I think that's just an interesting perspective, that the developing world is facing a lot of challenges, and so are we here in the United States. There's a lot to learn from us, but there's a lot to learn from the interventions that they are scaling up for a large amount of population.
I think it's very, you know, I know, Dr. Jalan, that you've also done some work in India. And I think it is interesting to talk about community health workers. And I was in the Peace Corps in West Africa. Community health workers in many ways are just as important as a physician, right?
Absolutely.
Because they can go out, or they can meet the people, they can develop those relationships. And there's still room, even in a place like Fort Bend and certainly in a place like Houston, but in Texas, right? This idea of community health worker can have a significant impact and really spread the influence of a physician, and mostly spread the influence of quality public health.
Well, and prevention, right? Yeah. So you're educating people so that they're not having to rely on their physician as much.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And like you said, especially in Texas, the greater Houston area, and in Fort Bend, some places are very accessible and kids and parents get access to healthcare the way they do. But the community health workers really open this huge plethora of options for prevention. Well, you know, if it's as simple as if you need your OR solution, you should breastfeed the child. That's how it's done. Or it's more complex to what nutritious meals look like, what immunizations are supposed to be in order. And if all of this prevention would work in connection to each other, we'll possibly have a healthier population.
Dr. Jalan, let me ask you one other question. We just got off the phone with the mayor's office of special events. They're doing this back to school fest. They're getting their immunizations. You saw the power of immunizations in the third world, right? Kids who get these are going to be more healthy. When you see that in Fort Bend and you hear a parent who talks about not wanting to be immunized, what's your reaction to that?
I'm surprised. That's a really good question. I'm surprised. Like, it is some things that until you don't hear them, you just feel. There was this whole polio movement where polio was eradicated from the United States a long time ago, but some other countries were grappling with it. And the point was that unless each child takes polio drops or each child gets immunizations, the herd immunity is not going to prosper. And I see everywhere else the population and the citizens have taken so well to it, and it is surprising to me. It took some time to understand why people are even opposed to the idea of immunization. Everything that immunizations do just improves healthcare and the course of life. But I'm just surprised. I really don't. It took me like a very, very long time to understand how there are some myths associated with immunizations and autism and all the other spectrum of diseases that are that don't exist and that are not created because of that have got nothing to do with immunizations, but still the legislative cycle appears very different to me.
Yeah, it's a very interesting deal. But we want our kids to be healthy, that's for sure.
Yeah,
so Dr. Palak Jalan, she is the Senior Program Manager over at Access Health in Fort Bend County. Dr. Jalan, thank you very much for the work you do, and thank you for being on Growing Up in America.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. And just to add to what you said, we do have our back-to-school health fair this Saturday and next Saturday, even in Fort Bend County. We have immunizations, backpacks, haircuts, all of that right here.
And so where will that be, Dr. Jalan?
This Saturday.
Where?
August. It's in the Richmond Clinic of Access Health, which is 400 Austin Street. And next Saturday, on 11th of August, it's in the Missouri City Clinic of Access Health.
Great. Missouri City in Richmond. Very good. All right. Hey, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Thank you. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to Growing Up in America, 90.1 KPFT. It's Mandy and Dr. Bob.
Yeah.
You ready for a little thumbs up, thumbs down?
I'd love thumbs up, thumbs down.
Boom. So what do you got today, Mandy?
Okay, so today we are talking about online preschool.
Yeah.
Thumbs up or thumbs down. And we want you to call in 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738, and give us your opinion. So this is pretty timely.
It is?
Well, for a couple of reasons. I know of one online program, preschool program, that's in Utah, and we're going to Utah tomorrow.
Oh, we are going to Utah tomorrow. Our child advocacy program. Worst takes us everywhere, doesn't it?
But there are more people who are looking into online preschool, and can an online personalized preschool experiment change the way rural America does early education?
Or even urban America, right?
Or urban. So I think that's the question. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
So, Mandy, when you think about this, and I want people to call in 713-526-5738, because when you think about that, my first reaction, the first time I ever heard about it, is, oh, come on, right? I think about, you know, everything you learned in kindergarten, how it's all about the teacher, and it's how you, the social skills you learn. To me, that seems to be pretty important at the outset.
Mm-hmm. No, because it is extremely important. We know, just like parents are the first teachers,
yeah,
a teacher in a classroom in pre-K,
right,
it has an extremely important role. And if that is mentoring, or not just teaching the kids the ABCs, but having the conversations, engaging them in a way that computers can't really. But it's mm-hmm. also the social and emotional behavior that children receive in a classroom that are really important.
Now, I've seen some programs, some of the ones that seem good to me, right, where it's really just engaging the parent and sort of showing the parent how to deal with the kids. And then the kids start doing, you know, letter identification and number identification, and they're beginning reading. But a lot of it is engaging the parent. There's some that even have, you know, some of the teachers call the mom and coach the mom or the dad, mm-hmm. whoever's at home,
mm-hmm.
so that there's sort of this whole cyclical way of learning, right? There's a whole circle of life around learning. And it seems that that could be promising, right? And less expensive. But you have to probably have to have parents more engaged. It has to be, I mean, the first thing is most parents are working. So that
seems
tough, right?
That's right. And I think to what you're saying is, if you can help empower and support a parent in teaching their child during that critical foundation time, would be extremely helpful. I think the reality is that most parents are working, and so we have to be careful just not to put the child in front of a computer and say they're going to preschool.
Because some of the good programs don't even, I mean, it's not like a whole day in front of the computer. It's like we're talking minutes, right?
713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Call in and give us your opinion.
What do you think of this idea? What are you, thumbs up or thumbs down? No fence sitting?
Well, I just want to clarify. Are we saying that online pre-K is better than the current public pre-K that is being offered?
I don't know that we're saying that.
Oh. So, I mean, I feel like there's a lot of great pre-K programs that can add on to a child's experience. So
yeah.
If they're going to public pre-K, or if they have a parent who's there and helping them with the curriculum, and this is an addition to, I'm good with it. But to just say online pre-K,
right now, when I look at the research, it's very clear, right, that a high quality full day at school pre-K is really one of the better things. Universal pre-K, where there's some peer learning going on, right? Peer learning, mm-hmm. very important. I mean, this is the thing that, of which, when we see research on positive pre-K, that's what it's all about, right?
Mm-hmm.
That full day, high quality pre-K, peer learning, it's universal. But what we're saying here is this online pre-K. I mean, if the alternative is no pre-K,
sure,
I'm thumbs up.
Okay, if you're in a rural area and they don't have pre-K, or there's no access,
school district doesn't.
That's
pay
right.
For pre-K.
I think it helps. It gives more tools for the parents' toolkit to help educate them.
Yeah, this will be an interesting. We can ask HD Chambers when he comes on next, right?
Yeah.
So I know that they're calling him right now. So apparently, no one really cares about online pre-K though. 713-526-5738. Don, what do you think about this idea of online pre-K?
I mean, your kids will be on some kind of, you know, iPad or
something.
Kind of pad the whole time. Why not actually have them doing something learn? Because
educational.
Yeah, because already it used to be back in the day, most kids would learn from watching TV, and they were. That's what TV was in
yeah.
the morning. It would be
Sesame
hey,
Street.
Here's all this educational
yeah,
things.
Yeah, Sesame Street.
Here's
Mr.
Your
Rogers.
Numbers, letters. Yeah. So lately, it's been here's YouTube, and they need to learn something. So why not have it where go to where they are?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that point that Don's making, right? This is something that's part of their life anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Let's coordinate it. Let's make it more effective. Let's make it research based, evidence based.
Yeah, and I agree with what Don is saying, what you are saying. However, when you're in a classroom where you have a parent that they're not just sitting there absorbing the information, but can contribute to a discussion or have that peer learning, that's where you see.
I'm thumbs up on this. I like this idea. I mean, I'm not going to say it's the replacement for a full day high quality, but really in Texas, we don't have full day high quality universal pre-K. And so I'm saying in some areas, I think this would be really nice, right? To be able to have someone who does this sort of stuff. So I'm thumbs up on this, Mandy.
What are you thinking? I think that there are quite a bit of programs out there now that you could consider pre-K early. Are we talking early education programs?
Yeah, like
sure.
Even,
I just wouldn't
even pre-K 3 and pre-K 2.
Yeah,
some of these could be a good thing.
I support full day quality pre-K.
Right, very good. Let's go to the phone lines and line two. You're on the line with Growing Up in America. How are you doing today?
Good, good.
Who's this?
Tom.
Tom, tell us, what are you thinking? Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Brother, it's all about, you got to cut the rednecks out of the loop. HISD, Spring Branch ISD, they need almost like a voluntary full day pre-K.
Uh-huh.
And let the affluent school districts, you know, the Klein ISDs, the Cypher ISDs, you know, march to Trumpism.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about these inner-city schools is, one, the parents have limited options.
Right, they're working.
And two, Spring Branch and Houston ISD, they have a ton of money coming in. They have the largest tax base in the city. Those are the two school districts that can afford to give those young kids a head start. And I would think that the school districts are pissing away a huge opportunity, and not just making it an optional year-round school. And part of that year-round school is that the kid is, you know, kindergarten or below, all-day pre-K.
So right now HISD does do full-day pre-K, right, for all the kids at HISD. Do you know what percentage, Mandy, of those kids take advantage of that?
I don't know off the top.
Yeah.
The thing about it is, it stops in the summer.
No, that's right. All school stops in the summer. What do you think, Tom? Should we be doing this online stuff during the summer?
I have access to that. You know, in reality, if mom and dad are banging down $100K a year, yeah, whatever. Gomer can play on the computer.
Don, did you have to bleep out Tom's word? You did. Okay, we bleeped out Tom's word. You have to watch your language there, Tom.
Oh, no, that's the beautiful thing about being 60 and close to death. I don't have to worry about anything.
Well, you do on the air, so.
No, thank you.
Go on, Tom. What were we saying? Oh, we lost Tom. Oh, okay, very good. So.
I didn't do it, but I was saying thank you for calling in.
Yeah, thank you, Tom, very much for calling in. So So you're thumbs down. You're like with Tom on this one, right? You don't like this idea of online stuff.
Full day quality pre-K is where it's at.
I agree with that.
That's what my message, and I'm sticking
to it. So you're saying all of that or nothing?
That's what I'm going for. That's
we're doing
right.
Full day,
why should
all
we
day
compromise?
Universal pre-K or nothing.
There we go.
Yeah.
That's what we need is full day quality pre-K.
We do. What percentage of the state does that, Mandy?
You know what? With you and me and all our partners and HD Chambers, Superintendent HD Chambers, who's about to call in, we're going to do it, and it's going to happen.
All right, let's get on the line with our good buddy HD Chambers. Do we have any theme music for HD today? Because I know HD loves a good theme music, so good theme song. I don't know that song.
It was great.
Is that HD's favorite song? Is that what we're thinking? HD Chambers is the superintendent from the A-Leaf School District. He's our good buddy. HD, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Bob. How are you today?
Very good. Hey. Mandy and I are super excited to talk to you. We were just talking about online pre-K and pre-K 3 programs. What's your take on that, HD, these online programs?
Well, as it relates to early childhood and pre-K,
there is a
small place for it, but I would advocate wholeheartedly against that being a solution or a meaningful solution for to how to educate a 3- or 4-year-old. You know, as you know, so much of early childhood and so much of pre-K is social skills and building emotional skills and how to interact with other children and how to, to maneuver and work inside a classroom. That's something technology can't teach you.
Yeah,
that's right.
There may be other roles for technology within pre-K to help with certain skills, but not to substitute for the interaction with a teacher and with other children.
You know, we sometimes think that in lieu of us having, full-day, high-quality pre-K, which, you know, we know can be can have significant impact, positive impact on a kid, we think in lieu of that, we're going to do some of these other things. But the fact is, as Mandy mentioned, what we really need in the research is pretty clear, right? What we really need in the state of Texas, especially for low-income kids, is full-day, high-quality pre-K.
It's indisputable, you know, no matter what one's belief, philosophy is on this, the academic data and information is both of you, you know better than I do, it's indisputable. And if the children that we're responsible for people like me that are responsible for educating, the bottom line is they're coming to us with more challenges, and the earlier I can get them, the better.
Mm-hmm.
Data proves that the earlier we get them in a quality program with a quality teacher with a quality amount of time, in this case more than just half of a day, we can actually demonstrate and have demonstrated that children, no matter what their background is, can perform at a high level. By not doing it, and again, I'm preaching to the choir here, but by not doing it, we run the risk of leaving a lot of children behind by no fault of their own.
Yeah. HD, earlier we were talking with someone from Fort Bend County and talking about how diverse the county is. But many people don't realize that A-Leaf School District, remind me, how many languages are spoken in your school district? It's an amazing number.
It's a diverse school district, right? Yeah. Economically and...
On average, on any given day, we have anywhere from 90 to 95 different languages.
Wow.
That is amazing. So as
to... And HD, you speak each of those as well, right?
Yes, I do, with a great Southeast Texas dialect.
But when we talk about the future, I mean, those kids are the future, speaking 90-something languages in one school district. And then I know that when we also, not just at A-Leaf across Texas, how many children are economically disadvantaged. Superintendent Chambers, how do you begin to address the child's education to ensure that they are successful and that we have kids that are graduating on time?
The issue with the language, in my opinion, there's three critical components to what we have to overcome with the children you're referring to. One, obviously, is the language barrier. And the challenge we have is trying to find adults who can educate these children in their home language, or at least communicate with them while teaching them English.
Mm-hmm.
If they all spoke Spanish, or if they all spoke German, or if they all spoke French, or if they all spoke Vietnamese, that'd be one thing. But they don't. They come from all countries across this planet. And so finding the language, someone to teach them in their language, to communicate with them in language, is a huge challenge. The other two is obviously their economic situation. But the third, which doesn't get talked about nearly as much, I try to talk about it a lot, but is the mobility.
Mm-hmm.
It's the lack of stability in that little boy, that little girl's life, meaning living in one place for more than 2 or 3 or 4 years so that they can stay in a school-structured system from their pre-K or kinder through second or third grade.
So that they can form those relationships as well, right, and have those mentors and be able to see it through.
Your question about, you know, what am I doing, or what could we, the royal we, the greater Houston area, what could we be doing to ensure that every one of these children that I'm referring to have an opportunity to graduate ready for either college, career, or the military? The one thing we could do is somehow... I don't know the answer to this, but somehow get in the middle of this mobility of the constant.
Oh, yeah.
Because the, yeah, like you said, Mandy, the social and the emotional ramifications of a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old being moved from one school to the next school to the next school, we can't place a value, an academic value, on how much that harms that child's ability to learn.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing, right? I mean, even when you look at affluent children, when they move, they're set back. And now you add children that are low-income kids and they move, of course they're set back. They're set back already by coming from low-income families. And then you add this. It's a hard eight ball to get from behind, isn't it?
It is. It is. And I'll tell you, Bob, the children who come from poor, low socioeconomic backgrounds, and even come to us not speaking our English language, those children are highly capable, highly capable. And if they stay in a stable environment, meaning their home, their school, getting used to the same teachers, the same administrators, the same bus ride, same kids, that affords us the opportunity, not only in A-Leaf but other urban districts, that affords us the opportunity to forge a relationship with the child, mm-hmm. and also to provide them an education and not have to overcome the social and the emotional stresses that comes with moving.
Sure.
Like I said, I can't overemphasize it enough. Yeah. We've seen it in our own district that if I don't care if the child is poor, I don't care if they don't speak the English language, if they're in our district for 4 or 5 years in a row in our schools, not moving, those kids are just as capable as any other child.
I appreciate you bringing that up because education is something that people really grapple with, right? Clearly, there are not enough Texas children succeeding in our public education system. And as we look at solutions, it's kind of, you know, what are the options in the box? And HD Chambers has been a huge champion and a great voice in the Houston area and in Austin with the Texas legislature saying, let's look at all the options. Let's acknowledge all the realities that these children are experiencing and bringing to the table. So I appreciate that, HD. But one thing I wanted to ask you is an update on school finance. This is something that has been talked about for the past few years. We know that there was a lawsuit. The legislature decided not to act on it last session, but to create a school finance commission. How are you feeling about the conversations and what are you thinking is going to happen next session?
I'll answer the first question first. How am I feeling about?
How are you feeling, HD? Tell me a little bit how you're feeling.
So and
HD, if I may, I want to preface Mandy's question a little bit too, because when you look around the world, whenever you want to develop an economy, you focus on investing in education. Whenever you want to turn around a population, you focus on education. And historically, the way people move from a lower economic class to a higher economic class, it's quality public education. But our state legislature doesn't seem to get that message of the evidence is to focus on public education. So that investment, the financing of our schools, will that change to the point where we are investing in our population?
No, I don't think what will come out of the commission, nor do I think what will happen during the session in 2019 is going to answer that question, Bob. I don't know. You probably have listeners out there who come from this from different perspectives.
Of course.
One, you know, some think that we're throwing way too much money at public education. Others don't think we're throwing enough at
mm-hmm.
it. Some think we're not spending it wisely enough. I mean, there's room for all of those opinions.
Yep.
Let me just share where I think there is no, it's a fact. It's, you know, you can have your own opinions, but you can't have your own facts.
Exactly.
But the fact is that with with the expectations we have for students in Texas, from the time they enter school, whether they enter as a pre-K-er or as a kindergartner or even as a first grader, till the time they graduate, the expectations we have placed on public schools is so great. Think about this for 1 second. We expect every child, regardless of where they come from, to graduate high school with either an opportunity to go to college and be successful, go into the workforce and be successful, or go into the military and be successful. However, what we have not done in Texas, and that's a reasonable expectation, mm-hmm. right? If I'm a citizen, parent, empty nester or whatever, I would, that's a reasonable expectation. What we have not done in Texas is we have not aligned the resources to give the public education system a chance to do just that. We, you know, I don't have to tell anybody where we rank on the state spending per child. It's in the bottom 10.
Yeah, we are the bottom 10, yeah.
I don't have, so the state of Texas has always asked their public education systems to do great things, but do it on the cheap. And we're getting to a point now that our and the children we just talked about.
Yeah.
Our poor children, our non-English speaking children, and our most mobile children. Those children, I don't know how else to put this, they are expensive to educate because they require time. They require additional time. I would, if the state were to fund it, I would anticipate many districts using more, much more of a year-round school type process, in order to make sure that there's no gap in learning and there's no melt in what the children have learned.
Yeah. There's a lot of work
we're
to
hoping
do there.
To see that through the districts of innovation,
yeah, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. So, hey, you ready?
Can I say something about that real quick?
Very, very quick. You like 15 seconds before we move to our next segment with you, HD.
Okay, I'll just say this, that if the state wants to see meaningful improvement across the board with these students, there's going to have to be an investment into the areas in which we spend our money on, and that is quality teaching, extending the school year meaningfully, and providing additional resources to help with that.
Yeah, there amen to that. All right, you ready for the final four at 54 with HD Chambers?
That's right. This is an opportunity for listeners to get to know you a bit better, HD. So the first question we have is, what was your favorite toy to play with as a kid?
My favorite toy was a bicycle.
Nice.
Oh,
riding
yes.
around the neighborhood. What did you want to be when you were growing up?
Initially, I wanted to be a professional baseball player. Then I wanted to be a pilot.
Oh. Pilot. You never thought about being a superintendent, did you, HD?
No, sir. That was not in my top 20.
You exceeded your own expectations there. What was your favorite book to read as a child?
Favorite book, Sam I Am.
Sam I Am? Oh, yes, there you go. And what was your favorite TV show as a kid, HD?
Oh, goodness. Barney Fife, Andy Griffin Show, and Gilligan's Island.
There you go.
Classics. And HD's a young man. He watched those on Nick at Night. I think that's when he watched those. HD Chamber is the world-famous superintendent of A-Leaf ISD. HD, thank you for all you do. Thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you having me.
Take
Thanks.
Care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
HD on Growing Up in America,
yeah.
Right? Well, very good. Mandy, we're off to the great state of Utah next.
Salt Lake City.
And Park City, I think.
No.
We're in Salt Lake City?
Yes.
We're flying to Salt Lake City, but I think our conference of advocates is in Park City. You didn't know that?
No, I've already been to Park City. I wanted to explore Salt Lake more. Anyways, moving forward.
Yeah, well, too bad about that. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
So, but it should be fun, right? These are advocates from all over the country getting together. We're going to talk about secrets, sort of activist secrets,
Whoa.
Right? So it should be fun. Hey, thank you guys for listening. We want to thank everyone who supported us in the pledge drive the last couple weeks. Community radio, it's where it's at. Mandy and I are doing this for kids. We hope that you guys do it. Hug the kids in your community. Hug your kids. And we will see you next time on Growing Up in America. Mandy and I will see you next time here on KPFT Pacifica Radio.